702
on 92.7 and 106 FM.
Streaming on 702.co.za.
The 702 app.
And on DSTV channel 856.
Just gone 6 minutes past 6 o'clock. Good evening from me, Ray White, in for Bruce. The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield is brought to you by APSA Corporate and Investment Banking. Fueling tomorrow's energy today at Africa Oil Week, that's Africanacity. APSA is a registered FSP. Well, coming up in your program in the next hour, retailers are opting to build their own units for renewable energy. Finding out exactly what they are doing there. Interesting story. David Peacock from Sanlam Private Wealth will have your market news. A strong week for mining companies, just not today, though. In the Friday file, a little bit later on, talking about the business of skincare. And if you want to open up your own skincare business, you need to listen to this interview. And then later on in the Brutal Biz Quiz, your chance to be the champion of the money show. All you have to do is answer a series of questions. And if you're the last person standing, well, you are the champion of the money show for this week. So lots to talk about this evening. I'd like to hear from you. You can leave an SMS on 31702 or 31567 or leave a WhatsApp voice note on 072-702-1702.
702. Let's walk the talk.
Streaming countrywide on the 702 app.
So Business for South Africa, they're calling on everyone over the age of 12 years, but mostly especially those of the over the age of 50 years to take advantage of vaccination sites, which will be open around the country this weekend. This is part of the government's second Vuma vaccination weekend. You know what it's all about. Get your vaccination. Well, joining us is Martin Kingston, chairperson of the Business for South Africa Steering Committee. Hi, Martin. Good evening. Welcome to The Money Show.
Evening to you too, Ray, and your listeners.
Right, here's the thing. Just over 13 million South Africans have been fully vaccinated. Those are the figures that came out today with the Health Minister, which equates to around 33% of the adult population. Why do you think this is so low? We were talking about 70%. That was the aim earlier this year. Why do you think we're sitting at 33%?
Well, that is still the aim, of course, Ray. We've seen a very significant tailing off in the level of daily vaccination. So yesterday we did about 137,000. In fact, in the country, we've got the capacity to do well over 350,000 a day between the public and the private sector. And we've seen that tailing off at all age groups, particularly the over 60s and over 50s. The younger cohort are not getting vaccinated as quickly as we would like them to. I think it's a combination of things. There's obviously people in adjusted level one, become rather more relaxed than they should be. We know that there's a high level of vaccine hesitancy, but more importantly, that actually there's a lethargy and people are finding it inconvenient to get vaccinated, whether it be with one dose or with two doses, which is why this coming weekend is so very important, because we're making sites available across the breadth of the country. It's very easy for people to get vaccinated. And if indeed they already have been vaccinated, but they know people, friends and family who haven't, we would encourage them so to do. We know that vaccination is the best and most effective way, not only of staving off illness and indeed death, but actually of opening up the economy and keeping it open, including over the coming festive season.
So what do people need to do then to get their vaccination? We know about hospitals, we know about various sites. What exactly can they do if they're listening to this interview this evening?
They just turn up with their ID at any of the vaccination sites. They are, as you say, public and private sector, not just hospitals, but obviously pharmacies. There are a number of pop-up sites that have been emerged all over the country. I think people know exactly where they are. There's a list that has been published. It's available again on the web of where people can actually go and get vaccinated. We're encouraging people. It's called Find My Jab, www.findmyjab.co.za. That tells you exactly where the site is that is closest to you. We're calling on all South Africans to become a vaccination champion, not just to educate themselves, but to promote vaccinations to their communities and networks. We think that it's actually very easy to be able to get vaccinated, and particularly now that we can access J&J in many of these sites. That's one vaccination rather than Pfizer, which is two vaccinations. It's easy to do, and we know that it saves lives and ultimately livelihoods by opening up and keeping the economy open.
Yeah. At Eyewitness News, one of the things we do is we keep a very close look on what's happening in Europe and elsewhere. And if you're having a look at Europe right now, they've got a problem when it comes to COVID-19. They're seeing a fourth wave. What are you expecting as Business for South Africa?
Now, we're very nervous that there's the possibility of a fourth wave. We need to either defer it or indeed flatten it. We're anticipating probably the end of this month or December through to January. We hope it won't be as extended or indeed as significant as we saw in the case of the third wave. But you're absolutely right. In Europe, they are experiencing very significant levels of infection, hospitalization, and indeed death. The Austrian government is now considering imposing a requirement that those who are not vaccinated actually will be subject to the effective level 5 lockdown restrictions that we saw last year. That's the last thing we want in South Africa. We need to open up the economy as quickly as possible. We need to encourage tourism. The only way that we can do that is not only by making sure that people get vaccinated ahead of the fourth wave, that we continue all of the non-pharmaceutical interventions we've got used to, mask wearing, social distancing, hand sanitization, and the like. And I need to reinforce the fact, simply because we've been doing this now for the last year and a half, is no excuse to feel that we can actually relax our guard. We need to be even more vigilant than we were. That's the only way we're going to impact the
state. Right, Martin, we're starting to lose you there. Just a final question, if you can just jump to the left or jump to the right. The local economy, is it opening up after the hard lockdown? Have we been repairing ourselves as businesses?
We have been repairing ourselves. We are going to see a recovery, as Minister Godongwana told us yesterday. It's something of a setback, but a lot of people have lost their jobs. A lot of businesses, particularly small and medium-sized businesses, have been damaged, not just, of course, by the lockdown, but also by the unrest of 4 months ago. We're seeing that recovery. We've got to sustain that recovery. The only way we can do that is by keeping the economy as wide open as possible.
Martin Kingston, he's the leader of the Economic Intervention Workgroup at Business for South Africa. Thanks so much for coming onto The Money Show. And I must admit, go get your jab. Go get it. Because if you see what's happening with the different news reports, it shows that Europe, there is a fourth wave there. They are battling, as you heard with Martin Kingston right now. And inevitably, I suppose, it is going to come here. We have November, we have December, we have the festive season. And some of our scientists are actually predicting that we may be hit for the fourth wave sometime in December, January. So something to think about this weekend.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
An interesting story written by Mia Lindeke for Eyewitness News. The country suffered 47 days of power cuts during the 2020-2021 financial year. And this year, it's said to be far worse. The power utility, that's Eskom, suspended load shedding this morning after a week of consecutive power cuts, which peaked at stage 4. In the past 3 weeks, South Africans have spent 15 days experiencing load shedding, working around load shedding rosters, navigating through traffic jams, also dealing with the financial losses due to load shedding. Well, in response, retailers like ShopRite, they're building their own renewable power suppliers. Very interesting story. On the line is sustainability manager at ShopRite, Sanjeev Raghubir. Sanjeev, hi, welcome to The Money Show.
Hi, good afternoon.
So, you've been left with no choice, have you? What have you decided and what are you doing?
Yeah, so we've decided to install renewable energy and specifically solar panels on the rooftops of our stores and our distribution centers. And there's a couple of reasons for this, Ray. I think the most important one was that it's a part of our wider climate change strategy to mitigate our direct or indirect emissions of greenhouse gases. And it's part of our long-term strategy to be at zero emissions by 2050. Which is in line with the Paris Agreement of 1.5 degree global warming. And it's typically what is being discussed at COP26 at the moment. But at the same time, it gives us a bit of resilience against the load shedding that we're seeing playing itself now. And it helps us to alleviate some of the pressure on the national grid. I mean, just to give you an idea of scale, with the amount of electricity we are generating from our solar panels now, we can equivalently take off about 2,600 average-sized South African homes off the grid for an entire year.
Sure. Wow. So, okay, how are you doing this? Is this just solar, and also as well, is this quite expensive to roll out?
So the first step is direct rooftop solar panels installations at our stores and distribution centers, and I might add onto our delivery trucks as well. And with that, we sign up on power purchase agreements with a number of suppliers. They do the installations. They provide us with electricity, and we're able to procure this electricity at a lower cost than the national grid. So that way, we're also adding to our operational efficiencies and trying to be as cost-effective as possible.
It's very interesting. Let's look at your capacity now. How many stores are you rolling this out at? Is it going to be 100% stores? What's the plan?
Yeah, so we there's two ways. We're rolling out at the stores. We've also signed up with what we call a wheeling agreement or contract, where energy provider or electricity provider generates electricity at multiple renewable energy sites and then wheels it through the national grid to our stores. I mean, close to 2,000 stores across the country. So that represents a significant amount of renewable energy. As we indicated, it will take us our capacity up to at least 25% of our electricity that's generated from renewable sources.
Here's a great idea. Maybe with ShopRite, you can start selling power. You can start generating it and also selling it to consumers.
Yeah, I think that's something. I mean, we've seen some retailers in Europe doing that, selling renewable power. I think, you know, as the country decarbonizes, and I think that's an ambition that the entire country is looking at, those opportunities might become more realistic.
Yeah, but it is a trend for retailers to do this, and I think it's a very good idea as well.
Yeah, I think, look, I mean, certainly we acknowledge that climate change is going to have an impact on our direct operations, on our supply chain, and on the communities that we trade and operate in. Not just in terms of the availability of product, but in terms of catastrophes like climate disasters of droughts and floods and fires. I mean, we see that playing out already now. Earlier this year, we saw the impact of Cyclone Eloise on Mpumalanga and the tomato crop. And we saw earlier this year the price of tomatoes was quite high. Mm. So with the ambition of ShopRite as being, you know, the most affordable and accessible and innovative retailer in Africa, that's very important for us. So, you know, we want to bring the best and most affordable prices to our customers.
Yeah. Has load shedding hurt you? Because I would think you'd have your own generators, but like you said, if they can't get the tomatoes to you, that's not going to work.
Yeah. So load shedding does hurt us. We have generators at our stores to ensure that our stores are running so that our customers are able to shop safely. But as you would know, the cost of fuel goes up, and that represents a significant cost for us in terms of running those generators.
Yeah, and I'm sure you're also expecting a double whammy because you've got the generators, you've got load shedding, and now you've also got those lovely fuel prices that went up, and that's quite significant. How does that sort of affect your bottom line?
I think it all adds up in terms of cost, and that's why this solar project is so important. Because we are able to offset some of the increases on energy costs through the savings that we see from solar. So it makes business sense, it's environmentally responsible, and socially it ticks all the right boxes. So, you know, it absolutely supports what very often people refer to as the triple bottom line.
Yeah, absolutely. Sanjeev Raghubir, Sustainability Manager at the ShopRite Group. It's great to have had you on The Money Show. Thank you.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Right, let's see what's been happening with the markets. It's been quite a nice week, actually. Portfolio Manager at Sanlam Private Wealth, David Peacock. Hi, good evening and welcome back.
Hi, Ray. It's more like welcome back to you. You've been missing for a while.
I know. I haven't been hiding, I promise. It's not Bruce, you know. It's just it is what it is. All right, the All Share. I mean, quite a strong week for the markets. Not a bad thing. What's going on with our markets? Why are we starting to shine?
Yeah, I think we've got a combination of factors. I think one of the factors is during the course of this week, we've got quite surprisingly high numbers out of the U.S. in terms of inflation. So generally, inflation and inflationary environment is quite positive for commodities. So for example, we saw our commodity stocks running quite nicely. And then in terms of today, we saw the Richmond results, which came out significantly better than sort of analysts were anticipating. And then I think the third issue, just in terms of our market, is that we had quite a nice running with Prosus and LastPass today, which it is a little bit surprising because, you know, we sort of saw numbers from Tencent and they weren't exactly surprising. But then again, you know, they did have singles, I think it's Singles Day in China yesterday. So, a bit of a bump there. So it really is a culmination of factors. So, you know, I think you need to look through just sort of the move of the index per se, because, you know, if you look at, for example, the financials today and the retailers, you know, you saw they were somewhat under pressure and possibly on the back of the slightly weaker rand. And you know, just in terms of the medium-term budget that came out yesterday and just sort of expectations of tightening coming through. So I think a myriad of factors, but, you know, while the market is going to be strong, we're going to enjoy it.
Yeah, yeah. Talking about the rand, it's been sort of sliding in the wrong direction for a while. It recovered a little bit today. What's driving that?
I would say to you that the inflation numbers in the U.S. And the Fed talking about tapering in terms of the stimulus that they put into the economy, they've been saying that they don't see the sort of tapering happening or interest rates rising to counter the inflationary impact. They don't see those happening simultaneously. And I think with the concern on the inflation numbers being as high in the U.S. as they were, the market, I think, is somewhat concerned that, you know, possibly you'll see interest rates moving higher in the United States sooner than anticipated. Added to that, obviously, with the medium-term budget, you know, coming through, the market wasn't exactly sure in terms of the extent to which spending would be cut. In terms of revenue collection, you know, is it a temporary situation because of the fact that we've had fantastic gains out of our commodity stocks and therefore tax collections have been significantly higher?
Yeah.
And, you know, is there follow through there? And then also just in terms of South Africa, you know, with our own inflation rates and you know, the fuel price moving up to the sort of levels that it is and indications that we'll probably see an increase in the petrol price over December as well, which is really taking it to, you know, sort of all-time highs. And obviously the impact that's going to have right from the start in terms of agriculture all the way through to retailers in terms of, you know, consumers. So I think there's a myriad of factors there. But, you know, we tend to have a very volatile rand. It weakened at sort of 15.29, 15.24 this afternoon, and you know, there's a good chance in the coming weeks you could see it back, you know, moving back below sort of 15 again.
Right. Interest rates. Now, you spoke about U.S. interest rates, our own interest rates. Next week, I think, is the MPC's next meeting. We've spoken now about higher inflation. We see it coming with fuel increases. Are we expecting an increase in the repo rates? A lot of people have been enjoying this little holiday we've had since COVID-19 started. Are we looking at something else coming?
I think the expectations that we heard yesterday in terms of GDP growth in South Africa being revised upwards would indicate that there possibly is some scope for maybe a small increase in rates just to keep inflation in check. So, you know, if there was going to be an increase in rates, I think you'd probably see sort of 25 basis points, but with the expectation that over the next while you'll probably see rates moving higher, you know, sort of 25 basis points
at a time. So possibly an increase of maybe 1%. But then again, I suppose in terms of where South Africa is, in terms of, you know, the discussion that you had just prior to me, in terms of the potential for a fourth wave in December coming through, and obviously the impact that's going to have on the consumer, on the economy, you know, the knock-on effects, you know, maybe they'll hold off a little bit and look, you know, to see in the new year again.
Yeah, because government will be cautious, I suppose. They don't want to rock the boat because this whole COVID-19 thing looks like it's great for us now, but like you said, come 6 weeks from now, we are going to have some sort of a difference there. It's just what sort of has happened from Europe coming to here as well. I'm sure then government will be factoring that into it, and also Lesetse Ganyago as well.
Yes, yeah. So that really is the point. And I think it would be welcomed if they were to hold off on increasing rates at this stage. But they could well indicate that going forward from here, should this inflationary bubble continue, because clearly the debate at the moment is this inflation issue transitory? So in other words, we've come off a low base. We've seen a fairly steep rise in inflation. But going forward from here, as we move into the new year, the base then is higher. So therefore, increases from that level is potentially not that great. And possibly as the sort of supply chain settles down, those bottlenecks that we've been seeing in terms of goods being transported, oil, energy, gas, all those sort of things globally, you could well see that topping out and inflation, coming somewhat lower.
Mm.
So I think that those are really the issues we just need to keep an eye on.
Yeah. Right, talking markets once again, movers and shakers today. What did you keep your eye on?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, Richemont came out with substantially better results than the market anticipated. The share was up 10% on the day. If we sort of go and look through the numbers just in terms of Richemont, you saw sort of the specialized watches division doing exceptionally well, which is really not anticipated. And in fact, most of their markets, if you look at the United States, did much better than anticipated. If we look at sort of Asia, excluding Japan, they did very nicely. It looks like sort of Japan and the Middle East were pretty much in line. So on the jewelry side, on the specialist watchmaker side, they did substantially better than anticipated. They obviously also looking at their online business, possibly a consolidation with another operator there. So that was very positive indeed and definitely helped lift the market. On the other side, Mediclinic came out with their numbers. Although the market seemed the numbers were significantly better than anticipated, and again, sort of Switzerland looking much better than expected, Middle East also good numbers, South Africa lagging a little bit, because of the knock-on effect of our last lockdown and the fact that elective surgery was really put on hold.
Mm.
So, just in terms of the numbers, revenue was up sort of 12%. Year-on-year, earnings before depreciation, etc., was sort of 46%. They've continued with a no dividend policy. Effectively, they've got sort of debt at sort of $1.5 billion in terms of pounds. So, from that perspective, they'd rather protect the balance sheet at this stage. So, even though we actually had quite good numbers out of Mediclinic, and again, I think better than the market anticipated. The market sold the share down somewhat today and Netcare as well, really on sort of the back of expectations of the same numbers. Even though from a structural perspective, they tend to be fairly different business in terms of their geographic location.
Yeah, very interesting. Portfolio Manager at Sanlam Private Wealth, David Peacock, always great to chat to you.
ABSA is fueling tomorrow's energy today with this commitment to facilitating conversations that seek to fuel the sustainable future of the African upstream at this year's Africa Oil Week. Only on The Money Show with Bruce Whitfield. That's Africanacity. ABSA's a registered FSP.
The Money Show.
The Friday File.
The Friday File.
Right, the Friday File, that's where we concentrate on a certain sector of business. Talking tonight about the business of skincare. And our guest is Monique Svaltman, who's a formulation specialist. They've developed their own skincare products range. And I thought this is such an interesting sector of business, to have your own business. Hi, Monique, welcome.
Hi there. Good evening, Bruce. Right. How are you?
It's Ray. Hi. It's a... You're a formulation specialist. What exactly is a formulation specialist?
So a formulation specialist or formulation chemist is somebody that studies the chemistry or the science of formulating specifically skincare products and cosmetics. So that would be anything from something that you wash your face with to brush your teeth to body care products, anything in that area.
Right. Tell us about your own skincare products range. How do you even develop that? Do you sort of come up with a chemical combination, or do you perhaps go to nature and have a closer look at what you can get from the wilds?
A little bit of both, actually. So Lulu Marula, the brand that we have, is it was kind of a combination of a creative side and a scientific side. So the science side of things, you need to know a lot about the skin. That's probably the most important part. It is a chemical formula, but the most important part is understanding the anatomy of our skin, understanding what it needs, and understanding how we bring that balance to the skin. And from there, you can look to nature as well as science and kind of formulate a product with the creative component, because that, at the end of the day, is what sets you apart from the rest. It's just having something creative, having a unique selling point of why do consumers want to use your product.
Oh, that's interesting. That's from the business side of things. Do you find as well, though, when you look at your skincare products, that people have different skins and you have to cater for those different skins? Some are oily, some are dry, some will turn gold into whatever. They're just different formulas when it comes to skins, aren't they?
Yes, yes, absolutely. So our skins are all quite unique to us. And what we like to do is we don't like to put a person in a box and say, you've got dry skin, you've got oily skin, and you'll always be like that. So we go through phases in our life, and our skin does exactly the same. It goes through different phases where change in hormone levels, diet, environment might change what your skin is doing. So by formulating products that can actually work with the skin's natural processes, like oil production, by formulating products that you can actually balance those processes, you can start to regulate. You can bring a dry skin back to its normal state. You can take an oily skin and you can actually guide the skin to produce less oil to give it to make a happy skin.
Okay. All right. You got your product, Lulu and Marula. Now you have, you developed it in your beauty studio in Cape Town. Take us through how you grew your business. You thought, oh, this is nice. We've developed something that's great. Huh? What happened after that?
So the inspiration, and I think like a lot of skincare gurus, as I want to call them, but a lot of people that have a passion for skincare, the inspiration tends to come from a place of wanting to help others and wanting to educate consumers about how to get that, I don't want to stereotype it, but that beautiful glowing skin that we all kind of want. Mm. Unfortunately, everybody will get a pimple or two, or to worse things like suffer from really bad acne. And these things affect us. So the inspiration to creating something like this tends to come from something deeper within. So we created this brand from our studio in Cape Town. We decided on sort of the range that we were going to have, which is quite simple. We've got products that do multifunctional things. And we formulated the brand before we launched, we did all of the testing that's required, made sure the products were ready to launch. And it started really small. We sort of haven't looked back. My business partner, she has a lot of experience in the e-commerce side of things. So we actually launched with an online store first.
Okay.
And through social media, you are able to kind of spread the word. And then we were sort of approached by different magazines to do a feature. And so the momentum started.
Yeah.
And we haven't actually looked back.
Oh, that's quite something. Did you start out on family and friends first just to see if it works?
We did. And I'll tell you, we still do. It's really important. We've got some of our partner, our salons, family members, and we'll do like a blind panel. And we genuinely get their feedback and take their feedback into consideration. Before we take it to sort of the higher powers that be, we like to get, feedback, and it's anonymous. So it's not like your mom can say, oh, I love the product. It's not that.
No, you get an honest answer at the end of the
day. Yes, yes.
So it's all natural, no animal testing. There's been this horrible thing that we've had in the history of this world where we have animal testing. It's all natural, isn't it?
Yeah. So we've worked really hard to stick to our ethics and create really conscious, good quality formulations where we also have very reputable suppliers of these raw materials. We have we kind of review all of our ingredients. We make sure that the ingredients are not tested on animals. Of course, the products are not tested on animals because we are in control of the manufacturing process. And then we are also endorsed by Beauty Without Cruelty, South Africa.
Good. Okay. All right. So let's get back to your market then. You obviously are in Cape Town. You said you do sell online. How far is your market reach?
We started off being based in Cape Town. We kind of do also have a little base, a home base in Johannesburg as well. So mainly the business was sort of distribution was from Cape Town. We've got a really good online presence, and we've now expanded more into the retail environment. So you can find us in selected Woolworths stores, Foschini, Truworths, and on a couple of other online platforms as well.
Okay. I see.
Which is really lovely.
Lulu and Marula started in 2013 by Jesslyn Shepherd. Now, that's your partner. Did you ever speak to say to Jesslyn, wow, I mean, this is like you said, it's Woolies, it's everywhere. This is getting big. I think we may have something here.
So when I first met Jess, I said to her, so there was already a sort of the groundwork had already been done. And it was a very, a crude version or like a junior version of what we have now. And I said to her, Jess, you are sitting on something that is going to be truly amazing. Let's do this. So I really, really, I'm very passionate about the brand and I'm very passionate about what we do. And to this day, I'll phone her and I'll say, I can't believe it. Looking back, it's really, really, it's something to be really proud of, but also humbling in a way, because there's so much potential and there's so much more that we can bring to the market.
Yeah. And it's word of mouth, isn't it? Very often. It's not about advertising or even being on the radio. It's just, hey, have you seen this product called Lulu and Marula? That helps, doesn't it?
It's word of mouth and the people. I strongly believe that the people are also very much part of what the brand is. And if you can bring that and show that through. So we focus really, really on giving good customer service and also people that contact us through our website. We focus a lot on, turnaround time of replying and assisting, and people email us about advice, recommendations. Word of mouth and the people that make the brand.
Yeah. Final question. Do you have a website?
Yes, absolutely. We do have a website. It is luluandmarula.co.za. It is also our online store.
Ah, there we go. It's that easy. Yeah. Monique Spaltman, great to chat to you. Formulation specialist. First time I've ever chatted to a formulation specialist. Good to have you on The Money Show. Thank you.
Walking this talk together.
Every hour.
Every day. This is 702.
Let's walk the talk.
8 minutes to 7 o'clock. Ray in for Bruce this evening. Time for the Brutal Biz Quiz. Now, first question, I'll ask you the first question, then I'll tell you how it's going to work. You see, so while I'm telling you how it works, you need to phone, because I think tonight we're going to stump you. We are absolutely going to stump you when it comes to the Brutal Biz Quiz. So, 0111-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. Those are the numbers to dial. Okay, I'm going to ask you a series of questions. First question, let's see if you got the answer for this one. Which finance minister tabled the country's first midterm budget? So the first one, not the one we just had now. Which finance minister tabled the country's first midterm budget? 0111-883-0702, 021-446-0567. I bet you won't have the answer for that. I bet you won't. I bet we've actually stumped you on that first question. So do give us a call. It's very easy. Which finance minister tabled the country's first midterm budget? 0111-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. You're probably asking yourself, what's up for grabs? Well, it's easy. You'll be the champion of The Money Show. You'll be the champion of this week. It means what you can do is you can tell Bruce on Monday that you're the champion, and it's as simple as that. Oh, look, I think I've got you. A few people phoning in, but no one correct just yet. You see, sometimes they put a little message up there saying, this person's got it. No one's got it. So, first question, which finance minister tabled the country's first midterm budget? And this is how it works. It's a Brutal Biz Quiz. All I do is ask you a series of questions, and if you are the last person standing, we take a bow. We actually bow down to you, and you are the champion. 011-883-0702. Right, Dino in Mondio. Hi, good evening.
How's it Liebenberg?
No, it's not, Dino. In fact, you know, this is the, you know what, let me put you this way. The first Democratic finance minister to table the country's first midterm budget. So we got to go after 1994. It's what happened after that. There was this guy who took over. He's very good, actually. He was really, really good. And he was our first post-1994 finance minister. Jeffrey in Montana. Hi, Jeffrey.
Hi, Derek Hughes.
No, wasn't you? No. Wasn't that person? He was the first one who did the first midterm budget round about that time. In fact, I'll give you a clue. It was in 1997, so you can rip out Google if you want to. Stephen in Norwood. Hi, Stephen.
Warren Duplessis?
No. He was before. No, Stephen in Norwood. You're talking after 1994. AJ in Santon.
Hey,
save me.
Hi, it's Trevor Manuel.
It is Trevor Manuel. It was Trevor Manuel. Absolutely. Congratulations. Right, AJ, just turn down your radio. We're getting a bit of feedback there. It was Trevor Manuel in his first ever mini budget in the country's 25th finance minister, Enoch Godongwana. That was his last weekend. He resisted pressure to use the fiscal space delivered by the 120 billion rand boosted in tax revenue. It was this last Thursday we had the big budget. It was mini budget. That was yesterday. All right, AJ, my money's on you. Which country is the largest producer of vehicles? Think carefully about this. Which country is the largest producer of vehicles?
The largest producer of motor vehicles.
Correct.
That would have to, it would either be Germany or China.
You said China. Okay, we're going to give it to you because you got the chair beforehand anyway. It is China. Well done there. You see, AJ, my money's on you tonight. Four of the world's five largest vehicle makers have failed to back the COP26 emissions agreement. That's been the big thing. Yet, despite months of pressure by the UK, four of the world's five largest car makers, it's VW, Toyota, the Renault Group, and Nissan Alliance, and the Hyundai Kia Alliance as well, they've not signed up. So well done on that one. All right, here's the thing. Now, think carefully about this, especially when you look at your TV tonight. MCG is the JSE trading code of which broadcasting company? MCG.
MCG.
MCG, G for goat, MCG, is the JSE trading code of which broadcasting company? Broadcasting company. They trade.
Is that McGregor?
No.
One second, hold on.
No, I'm sorry, AJ. You only get one bite of the pie, I'm afraid. Which broadcasting company? Come on. It's the big one. It's the other big one. Let's go to Blessing in Sandton. Hi, Blessing.
Hi, sorry, the question again?
The question is, MCG is the JSE trading code of which broadcasting company?
I'm struggling on that.
Okay, sorry. Oh, no, I'm going to have to let you go. I tell you what, we're going to be generous about this one. If anybody gets this question, you are then the big champion of the Brutal Biz Quiz. It's an easy one. Come on, it's not that brutal. MCG is the JSE trading code of which broadcasting company? Lebohang, save us here. Lebohang in Pretoria.
Yes, it's a British broadcasting company.
No, it's not. It's a South African one. Lebohang, no. All right, my money now is on Abu Bakr. If I was a betting man, Abu, is it Akbar? Akbar, hi, Akbar. Good evening.
Hey, Ray, how are you?
Good. Akbar, the answer is?
The Multi-Trade Group.
It is indeed. Akbar, you are the champion of the Money Show for this week. What are you going to be doing this weekend, Akbar? You're going to be going out and telling everyone you're the champion.
Definitely, yes.
Lovely. Akbar in Krugersdorp. Have a great weekend. That's Akbar in Krugersdorp. Of course, it's multi-choice. MCG. Now, the parents of brands such as DSTV, you know them. Supersport has eked out a 5% improvement in subscribers from a year ago, with most of that growth coming from outside of South Africa. The figure for South Africa, growth of just 2%. There we go. That's the Brutal Biz Quiz. Akbar, congratulations.